Chapter 19. Charming evening. At 10 the servants were told to call Sir Pitt and the household to prayers. Sir Pitt came in first, very much flushed, and rather unsteady in his gait, and after him the butler, the canaries, Mr. Crawley's man, three other men, smelling very much of the stable, and four women, one of whom, I remarked, was very much overdressed, and who flung me a look of great scorn as she plumped down on her knees. After Mr. Crawley had done haranguing and expounding, we received our candles, and then we went to bed, and then I was disturbed in my writing, as I have described to my dearest, sweetest Amelia. Good night. 1,000 kisses. Saturday. This morning, at 5, I heard the shrieking of the little black pig. Rose and Violet introduced me to it yesterday, and to the stables, and to the kennel, and to the gardener, who was picking fruit to send to market, and from whom they begged hard a bunch of hothouse grapes. But he said that Sir Pitt had numbered every unjack of them, and it would be as much as his place was worth to give any away. The darling girls caught a colt in a paddock, and asked me if I would ride, and began to ride themselves, when the groom, coming with horrid oaths, drove them away. Lady Crawley is always knitting the worsted. Sir Pitt is always tipsy, every night, and, I believe, sits with Horrocks, the butler. Mr. Crawley always reads sermons in the evening, and in the morning is locked up in his study, or else rides to Mudbury, on county business, or to Squashmore, where he preaches, on Wednesdays and Fridays, to the tenants there. 100,000 grateful loves to your dear papa and mama. Is your poor brother recovered of his rack punch? Oh dear! Oh dear! How men should beware of wicked punch! Ever and ever thine own Rebecca, everything considered, I think it is quite as well for our dear Amelia Sedley, in Russell Square, that Miss Sharp and she are parted. Rebecca is a droll funny creature, to be sure, and those descriptions of the poor lady weeping for the loss of her beauty, and the gentleman with hay-colored whiskers and straw-colored hair, are very smart, doubtless, and show a great knowledge of the world. That she might, when on her knees, have been thinking of something better than Miss Horrocks ribbons, has possibly struck both of us. But my kind reader will please to remember that this history has Vanity Fair for a title, and that Vanity Fair is a very vain, wicked, foolish place, full of all sorts of humbugs and falsenesses and pretensions. And while the moralist, who is holding forth on the cover an accurate portrait of your humble servant, professes to wear neither gown nor bands, but only the very same long-eared livery in which his congregation is arrayed. Yet, look you, one is bound to speak the truth as far as one knows it, whether one mounts a cap and bells or a shovel hat, and a deal of disagreeable matter must come out in the course of such an undertaking. I have heard a brother of the story-telling trade, at Naples, preaching to a pack of good-for-nothing honest lazy fellows by the seashore, work himself up into such a rage and passion with some of the villains whose wicked deeds he was describing and inventing, that the audience could not resist it, and they and the poet together would burst out into a roar of oaths and execrations against the fictitious monster of the tale, so that the hat went round, and the badgick I tumbled into it, in the midst of a perfect storm of sympathy. At the little Paris theaters, on the other hand, you will not only hear the people yelling out, "H. Cretin! A monster!" and cursing the tyrant of the play from the boxes, but the actors themselves positively refuse to play the wicked parts, such as those of infamous Angles, brutal Cossacks, and whatnot, and prefer to appear at a smaller salary, in their real characters as loyal Frenchmen. I set the two stories one against the other, so that you may see that it is not from mere mercenary motives that the present performer is desirous to show up and trounce his villains, but because he has a sincere hatred of them, which he cannot keep down, and which must find a vent in suitable abuse and bad language. I warn my inn friends, then, that I am going to tell a story of harrowing villainy and complicated, but, as I trust, intensely interesting crime. My rascals are no milk and water rascals, I promise you. When we come to the proper places we won't spare fine language, no, no. But when we are going over the quiet country we must perforce be calm. A tempest in a slop basin is absurd. We will reserve that sort of thing for the mighty ocean and the lonely midnight. The present chapter is very mild. Others, but we will not anticipate those. And, as we bring our characters forward, I will ask leave, as a man and a brother, not only to introduce them, but occasionally to step down from the platform, and talk about them. If they are good and kindly, to love them, and shake them by the hand. If they are silly, to laugh at them confidentially in the reader's sleeve. If they are wicked and heartless, to abuse them in the strongest terms which politeness admits of. Otherwise you might fancy it was I who was sneering at the practice of devotion, which Miss Sharp finds so ridiculous, that it was I who laughed good-humoredly at the reeling old silliness of a baronet, whereas the laughter comes from one who has no reverence except for prosperity, and no eye for anything beyond success. Such people there are living and flourishing in the world faithless, hopeless, charitless. Let us have at them, dear friends, with might and main. Some there are, and very successful too, mere quacks and fools. And it was to combat, and expose such as those, no doubt, that laughter was made. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.